You're listening to HR Market Watch here on the HR Happy Hour Network. I'm your host, George LaRocque. HR Market Watch puts a special lens on new and innovative HR technology from emerging and established technology companies. Join me on my quest to find what workforce trends and what technology really matter to the world of work and HR. Learn more about the trends and the technology we discuss at HRWins.com and find more HR Market Watch episodes on the HR Happy Hour Network at HRHappyHour.net. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another HR Market Watch. It's me, George LaRocque, and I'm excited for another podcast today. But before we jump in, I'd just like to remind you that if you're doing something interesting in HR or HR technology, whether you're an employer or a technology vendor, I'd love to have you here as my guest on HR Market Watch. How do we do that? Well, just shoot me an email at HRMW, that's HRM like market, W like watch, at HRWins.com, and we'll start the conversation there. Now, for today's show, we're going to keep with our ongoing theme of getting real, this time about talent acquisition or recruiting, as we like to call it. There's always a lot to talk about in the world of recruiting and technology. It attracts a lot of attention. The recruiting business problem is felt by just about everyone. I mean, you can't get away from news that's related to recruiting. There's that Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics jobs report. That's the one that gets attention from the media everywhere, every time it's been updated. The one that answers questions like, were jobs added? Did payrolls grow? What's the unemployment rate? Then you've got the ADP and LinkedIn reports. Those have both been cited by at least one U.S. president. The ADP National Employment Report is the one that looks at similar stats to the Department of Labor report, but I guess through a payroll market leader's lens. And then that LinkedIn Workforce Report, which is based on their 140 million or so U.S. profiles and the job activity within the site. Now, add to that the headlines that we see relentlessly about skills shortages and all of the political rhetoric about jobs in different sectors of the economy. And well, everyone's got an opinion about the job market, and a lot of folks are trying to make sense of it like an economist would. And, you know, thinking about the job market like an economist is something more and more tech vendors are starting to do. Getting data-based insights to where the market is headed can be invaluable. And today, we've got an honest-to-goodness economist on the podcast to look at what's happening in the market and relate it back to employers and candidates. I loved having that conversation, and I want you to stay tuned because I'm certain you'll enjoy it too. Now, this is usually where I shift gears over to the HR Market Minute, but in this episode, my rant about getting real is just getting started, and the Market Minute is really tied at the hip to it today. So I'm just going to keep going on this. So in addition to all that media and market awareness about recruiting and jobs, there's also awareness of the inefficiency in the recruiting and hiring process, as well as the cost that is associated to that inefficiency. And simply put here, businesses spend a lot of money on recruiting. Deloitte cites that $72 billion is what is spent in the U.S. alone on recruiting services, staff, and products, and they put that global number at three times that. So what, $215 billion or so. Meanwhile, the American Staffing Association, that's the ASA, puts staffing spend for both full-time search and placement and temporary and contract work at just under $150 billion in the U.S. Again, that's U.S. alone. Now, staffing industry analysts looked at just the global job board market. And so just for job boards globally, they put the size of that market somewhere between 10 and 20 billion. round it off to a 15. Now, take that level of awareness and market opportunity and consider also that everyone that has ever worked, I guess, beyond a family business has had to go through an interview process. And yeah, I mean, we've all had to interview for a job before. And now also most managers or supervisors have had to hire someone. So everybody has an opinion about how to make finding a job and or hiring someone better from one or both of those perspectives, either the person doing the hiring or the person being hired. So what we end up getting in this market is a constant influx of entrepreneurs, some that have been recruiters on either side of the employer or agency desk, some that have been executives or managers and have felt the pain of hiring someone or hiring lots of someones, and they all come up with their version of a better mousetrap. So recruiting is always a hot market for technology. And whenever there's a hot tech trend in the market, I can expect to see it applied to recruiting. Now, this is not a bad thing. Fresh eyes on a problem and new thoughts about technology are good for all of us in the industry. And then in the same way that those entrepreneurs are flooding in with their fresh eyes and ideas, investors are attracted because they see the spend and the inefficiency in the process from all perspectives. They see the mix of new technology, and then they see a recipe for disruption. Like I said, it's not a bad thing, but it sure can be overwhelming to recruiting and HR leaders, or the customers of this technology, the folks who are going to put it to use. So many people seemingly solving the same problems in myriad ways. And that very thing is happening right now in one hot area of technology: artificial intelligence, AI. AI as a concept is not new, but as the amount of data we can access continues to grow exponentially, and consumers read candidates and employees, and then businesses interact more and more together via interfaces on their smartphones like SMS or apps that are built for messaging or via web browsers in their desktops or on their laptops, the opportunity to leverage AI in the world of recruiting is ripe. I mean, AI has taken off. Just since 2016, we've seen dozens of companies, both startups and existing market leaders, bring AI into recruiting. It's commonly referred to as automation or bots, and it's causing quite a stir. Now, the reaction in recruiting is just as it is everywhere else that they're talking about artificial intelligence. A lot of talk about jobs going away, predictions that recruiting will be done almost in whole by bots. Here's where we go back to today's theme. Let's get real. No one in the market can read all of the tea leaves and see the future, but here's what I do know. We've heard this kind of hype before. Let me take you back. Between job boards and employers' direct career sites, we were rarely going to have to pay employment agencies a fee. That was the buzz in the late 90s. Didn't really come to pass. There was an impact, but employment agencies are still thriving. Web-based applicant tracking systems, or ATSs, were going to eliminate recruiters' jobs on the employer side because of the power of their databases and matching technologies. This was the buzz in the early 2000s. I can almost hear everyone laughing as I'm saying this. Didn't happen. Incremental improvements, process improvements, automation's good, but that just didn't happen. Now, LinkedIn, that was going to be the next staffing agency killer because, I mean, we'd all be connected already. What would we need a middle person for? We don't need a conduit to connect when we've got LinkedIn. That was the buzz in 2005. Again, impact, yes. Huge impact on the market. Big market player. Didn't replace all the jobs. So fully automated sourcing and search was going to put recruiting sourcers out of business. take their jobs away. But it didn't. The role changed, but sorcerers have not disappeared. You get the picture. I could go on and on with many examples. AI is clearly going to change things. I'm a believer in AI. It's a huge opportunity. I mean, if your role is focused on purely administrative tasks like scheduling interviews or other highly administrative roles, you might think about expanding your skills. So hey, recruiters and high volume roles, you should be thinking about whether you're adding value or just working a funnel, just pushing candidates through a process. And you should try to add value. But overall, AI is going to help recruiters and recruiting leaders in areas that they're struggling with right now. Areas like marketing, analytics, or assessment. These are all areas, three big areas where recruiters and recruiting leaders are being asked to step up, but don't classically have the skills to do so. Look for AI to help there, or in areas where recruiters can't possibly keep up with the volume of data that they have. Look for AI to help minimize that burden. AI is going to open the door for recruiters to engage with more candidates, more qualified candidates. It is not going to eliminate the human from the process across the board. So recruiting leaders, my recommendation is to look for two things in AI and automation, two types of benefits. First, look for the automation that's going to improve your world administratively in areas like scheduling or event-driven workflows for candidate engagement. And look for AI that's going to help you in areas like analytics, marketing, or assessment, areas where you don't have the skills or where the tech is just too expensive or cumbersome today. Examples of opportunities to take advantage of AI, a long list of them, are on the HR Win site. If you look under the talent acquisition topic, there's a piece that I did with a few other analysts in the space with the HR Federation. Check it out. You'll get a lot of ideas about where to apply automation and AI. But now, let's get on with our interview. I've got a great conversation for you to listen into today. If you know me and you follow the HR Wins at all, you know that I love data. So to talk to an economist is a treat. To talk to an economist that is working for iSIMS, a market-leading applicant tracking and recruiting platform, well, there's insight there. I could talk to this guy all day long. I think you're really going to enjoy this. And without further ado, let's listen in on the conversation I had with the chief economist from iSIMS. Okay, I have been looking forward to this interview because it's something really relevant, but at the same time, a little different. Joining me today is Josh Wright. He's the chief economist at iSIMS, and he's focusing on U.S. hiring trends. He has a really interesting background, and you know, here on HR Market Watch, we're used to seeing HR practitioners, technologists, marketers, or some kind of hybrid of those experiences. But given Josh's role, he stands out on the podcast, and that's the something a little different. So Josh is a former U.S. economist with Bloomberg Intelligence, a former Federal Reserve researcher, policy advisor, and market analyst. He's an expert in labor, housing, mortgages, and monetary policy, and he had prior service with the UN field missions in Kosovo and Afghanistan, which is, I find that all fascinating. Again, he's with iSIMS, who iSIMS describes themselves as a leading software solution that unifies all aspects of talent acquisition. With iSIMS, companies can manage their entire talent acquisition lifecycle with a single SaaS application. Josh, welcome. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Thanks. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, well, I have been looking forward to this all week, and I, you know, iSIMS is a brand that I think most folks the tuning into the Market Watch will know. But just in case, for those that don't, iCIMS is a leading talent acquisition platform, a real industry success story with more than 3,500 customers being privately held, over $100 million in recurring revenue and growing rapidly. Like I said, it's a true industry success story in the segment, and that's for anybody who doesn't know iCIMS. But Josh, what I'm really curious about is you. I talked about your background. How did you go from working as an economist, market researcher, policy advisor, into finding yourself as an economist at a talent acquisition technology provider?
Well, it is an interesting story. I certainly bring a diversity of perspectives and experiences to the role, and I think that that's an important part of how I got here. As much as I'm an economist, you might say I'm also a specialist in change, certainly working at not only Bloomberg, but also at the Federal Reserve. I should point out, I started there just before the financial crisis got going. And then also, even working for the UN, I've many times been dropped into situations where it's a dynamic environment. People don't know how to solve these new problems that are coming up and answer these new kinds of questions. And I help organizations sort that out. And my understanding is that, like a lot of other tech companies, iCIMS realized that they were sitting on a lot of data that would be really great to make use of if they could just find someone who had the skills in order to unlock that potential and unlock that value. And they interviewed not only a large number of economists, but also a broad range of them. So some that were more academic, some that were less academic, some that had more media experience, more government experience, or some had less. And I think it was just, this was the right fit.
Wow. That's really cool. I applaud iCIMS for making an investment in their data. And I know that there's a lot of data there. We'll get into that in a minute. So as chief economist at iCIMS, what's the mission? What's your mission there? Are you more internally focused, or are you there to impact customers with your insights, or a little of both?
Yeah, it's definitely a healthy mix, which is something that I like. I like to look at problems from a variety of perspectives. So on the one hand, I work with our in-house data science team and help them think about the data that we have and how we can unlock value for specific clients to understand how they can benchmark their own performance relative to industry trends and the broader economy. And then I also take our data and find ways to mobilize it for the broader public and talk about what's going on out there in the economy, not only using the public data, of course, but our own proprietary data. What's our unique perspective on the hiring landscape? And my official title is chief economist, but sometimes we talk informally about my role being data spokesperson for iCIMS. And but to that, I would add that I'm also something of a translator and a diplomat, both internally, because I bring together different people across the organization to help solve these problems, and then also externally, because I'm trying to explain economics to HR people, and I'm trying to explain HR issues to economists and people who are interested in the kinds of things economists talk about.
I love that, a translator and a diplomat. At a lower level in our segment, you know, we see HR practitioners, folks in talent acquisition who are, trying to make sense of data and analytics, and a translator is exactly what they need, even at that lower, more tactical level. So that really resonates with me. It probably resonated with the practitioners listening to the podcast. So you've mentioned the data a few times, and as a market analyst, I love data. So I've also had the benefit of taking several briefings over the years from iCIMS, and I've listen to execs at your firm talk about, the company, the product, strategic direction. But there was one briefing I took with your CMO, Susan Vitale, where she gave me a glimpse at market data that iCIMS had been collecting for a very long time. I don't know if this was before your time or after your time. I think the data was certainly collected before your time. It was incredible, the amount of data. It was there to help with strategy, product direction, go to market, I was, you know, as a market analyst, I was wishing I could just get my hands on the database. But I'm curious about, so I have this perspective that iCIMS has been really smart about amassing a very good data set over the years. And can you share a little bit more about some of that data, and you know, understanding you can only share what you can share, but is the iCIMS data, you know, the primary source? Is it surveys, customer surveys that you use, or you know, where does it all come from? What is the mix?
Well, there is definitely a wealth of data here, and that was one of the big attractions for me as an economist to come to iCIMS, was the opportunity to work with novel data sets and develop new kinds of insights on the labor market. Although I should also point out, as much as I'm a data geek too, all of these numbers do represent human lives, and not to get, you know, sappy or sentimental about it, but the human interest in this stuff is real, and I think that's part of what makes it so exciting to work on these issues. A very large portion of what we do is using our own internal data based on our system and observing the behavior of clients and job applicants in that system. But we also do conduct surveys, and we certainly make use of external sources. You know, I've become very familiar and expert on a whole variety of sources that I used at the Fed and at Bloomberg. So we take a real kitchen sink approach, because we think it's, you know, one of the key things we're trying to do here is connect the dots for clients and for the broader public. When it comes to HR professionals in particular, harkening back to your last point before this question, I have found in my experience that there are a lot of recruiters and HR professionals who are hungering for that bigger picture. And that's a big thing that we're trying to achieve with the work that we do here. We're trying to help them be able to connect the dots, not only so that can inform their business decisions and their everyday working lives, but also so that they can connect the dots for the people that they report to, so that they can speak to an executive audience with fluency about these bigger picture issues and how the work that they do impacts the organization and how it is in turn influenced by what's going on outside the organization. In terms of some of the data that we use, you know, we see job openings, we see when they get filled, how long it takes to get them to get filled, who gets filled into them, how many people were applying to them to begin with, and then we can apply a whole variety of filters onto that in terms of which industry is this, what kind of occupation is it, what's the size of the company, where's the geographic location, was it a full-time or part-time, the list goes on and on. And then, of course, we can see every step of the hiring process along the way.
Yeah, those are some really great points about how the data is being used and the impact that it will have on lives, and that's, you know, why we're all here doing, you know, what we do, you know, to have that impact. And I think, you know, I talk a lot about context. So there's this balance, I think, recruiters and business leaders, executives, you know, are trying to achieve, which is, you have to pay attention to, you know, the trends and the big issues. But at the end of the day, you have to, you know, fill positions and execute and, you know, get the job done. And so this balance between the strategic and the tactical, it's always a, you know, you can get too distracted by one or the other, and they can both come back to hurt you if you ignore either one. So that translator, I'll come back to that. That's a great word to use to describe, you know, one of the great values that you add in translation. And okay, so moving along, the data is really impressive, and I can't even do it justice without the sort of visual. You know, nobody, I don't think anybody can really appreciate the amount of data that iCIMS has on what's happening in the market. I've seen it, and it's really impressive. But let's get into the report. I really loved your new report, and you know, let's get into some of your perspective on some of the findings. So this was the U.S. hiring trends report. So first off, what was the goal when you, I know when I approach a report, you know, there's a goal, and I usually come in with some a hypothesis or some hypotheses or questions I'm looking to answer. What was there a goal or were there questions you were looking to answer when you set out with this report?
Well, we didn't go into it with a formal hypothesis. This was more of an exploration. We're still, in my view, we're laying the foundation to do more sophisticated hypothesis-driven type work. But the first step you have to do is figure out what kind of data do we even have available and what's our capacity to extract that and to make use of it and to analyze it. So we wanted it to address some of the burning questions that are out there about the U.S. labor market. So we titled it Occupation and Opportunity because we were looking at, for the first time, at our data on individual occupation types. We'd already spent most of 2016 looking at our data in terms of different industries, so manufacturing versus healthcare and professional business services and the rest. But what about accountants versus lawyers versus machinists versus administrative assistants? And we wanted to understand how that looks across different industries and compare that to some of the conventional wisdom out there about what kinds of jobs are available at different kinds of companies. Previously, we'd explored questions like salaries and overtime regulations and the role of internships. But really, in this report, we wanted to take a look at if everyone's worried about the state of the middle class, well, let's talk about that. What is the state of the middle class? How can our data speak to that? What kinds of jobs are people getting most recently, just in the last year?
Yeah, and these topics, given the 2016 presidential election, these are getting industry growth, jobs growth, skills, these topics, things that we spend a lot of time in our industry talking about all the time, just got supercharged through that process. And we're going to stay away from politics. But what a great time to be looking at this type of data. Some of the things that jumped out, in the report, you focused on healthcare and professional and business services. What led you to that focus?
Well, you're right. It's definitely this is touchy stuff. That's why people pay attention to it, but also means it's a little bit dangerous to dip your toe in the water when if you can't see below the surface. What might be seeing your toe break through? So the approach that we took was, what are the most important, a lot of people are wondering, okay, what's the state of opportunity in for the middle class in the U.S. today? So everyone wonders about manufacturing, and that's, as is well known at this point, that is not the largest proportion of jobs in the U.S. The manufacturing industry's proportion of total payrolls in the U.S. has actually been declining for a number of decades. But we wanted to cover off that industry because it's so much in the eye. And then we wanted to compare that to the top three industries in the U.S. by the number of job openings, the people who are providing the largest numbers of opportunities. And then so that meant that we were looking at healthcare, professional business services, and retail plus manufacturing. And healthcare and professional business services are simply the ones that are growing the most robustly. You can see that, in fact, over the last couple of recessions, while professional business services, that's tends to be more of your straightforward white collar jobs. Those industries, their job growth tends to fluctuate with the economic cycle. So they decline quite a bit during recessions, but overall they're on an uptrend in the U.S. economy. And in contrast to that, the healthcare industry, it keeps growing even during a recession. It doesn't grow as fast as professional business services, but because it keeps going through the recession, every time you hit a recession, the healthcare industry becomes a larger portion of our total employment base in the U.S.
Interesting. I haven't heard it described quite that way. And anecdotally, I spend a lot of time with the tech vendors like iSIMS, and I know that when I ask what industry segments are you having success? Who's buying this technology? Who's implementing innovative programs in HR and HR technology and recruiting? I always hear healthcare and professional services is how it's usually, but professional and business services as the proper name for the segment. So it's clearly in the field. It's happening as well. Now, the types of jobs that are there, you mentioned part-time and sort of myriad of job types, but there's been a lot of talk about a shift to the contingent workforce, part-time and different sort of working models, gig economy type stuff. Did the report reflect any of those trends?
Yes, we definitely saw clear evidence that these trends have had a major impact, although it varies a lot across different industries. So looking at part-time work, we found that that was most prevalent in the retail industry, where it consumed about 43% of the jobs that were created and filled
That
in
makes sense.
2016, 43% compared to at most 18% amongst the other three industries, so more than twice as much. And that probably has to do with the fact that you've got a lot of fluctuations both seasonally and then during each individual day in the retail trade. So you've got a lot of people that don't need to work full time a lot of them need to just cover the periods where there's maximum demand. A lot of people in the store are waiting in line. And then for contingent work, that was the healthcare industry that was the standout. That was 18%. So not nearly as much as the part-time workers in retail, but 18% contingent workers in healthcare compared to at most 4% among the other industries. And that has to do with just it's hard to predict when people are going to need healthcare. When are people going to have medical emergencies? You don't know for sure. So you've got to have a lot of people who will be on call. And so that's a big deal for healthcare providers.
Right. I think that segment gets overlooked in the contingent workforce conversation, but I know that industry, the healthcare industry has had contract a co you know co a contract strategy, contract labor strategy to deal with demand on a for a long, long time, growing out of the staffing industry. So that's really neat. Now, were there any surprises in the report for you? Did you did you go in, find anything you didn't expect to see there?
There were a couple of surprises. One was when we did look at the manufacturing industry, we were surprised to see that the composition of occupation types in there looked more closely resembled the professional and business services than it did either healthcare or retail. So I went in there naively thinking that manufacturing might look a little bit more like retail because you think that you're going to have some significant proportion of low-skilled workers, people who are maybe working the factory floor, and certainly what are called production workers. That was a significant proportion of manufacturing payrolls. That was just over a fifth. But we found that almost half as much, about 9%, were occupations in computers and math, people who were statisticians and data scientists and computer programmers. And that was almost the exact same proportion as in professional and business services, the classic white-collar category. So to see them so closely matched, that was really surprising. And it wasn't just in that particular category, although that was notable. But overall, there was such a diversification of different jobs. So when we talk about the manufacturing industry, we're really talking about a very broad array of different kinds of skills that are in demand. And it's much more than the stereotypical image of, if not Joe the plumber, Joe the factory worker. And so that was one of the big takeaways for me. But also, in another sense, we confirmed some conventional wisdom where we saw that there really is a squeeze on healthcare, and there were some positions in the healthcare industry, like nurses, where in some cases there were fewer applicants per position than there were for computer programmers. So we hear about there being a big squeeze for tech talent, but the squeeze for healthcare talent is just as acute and in some cases significantly more acute.
Wow, I think there's a there are a couple of things that jump out at me based on what you just said, and starting with the latter on the nurse skill squeeze. I think there's a common perception that segment that's been addressed. There's been so much focus on that shortage for such a long time. I'm surprised to hear that it's still a drastic, shortage. So that is really, really interesting. And then on the manufacturing breakdown with the 9% in math and engineering and science, is that Do you think automation is driving that? Do you think the manufacturing environment itself is requiring more of those skills in order to operate and move those environments forward, or is that a fair question based on the data that you have?
No, I think that's the clear implication of what we're seeing. So I think pretty much every report these days on manufacturing, if they discuss the issue, they talk about automation's having a big impact, and you need people to have skills that allow them to engage directly with computers in increasingly sophisticated ways. And the thing about computers is, their language is numbers and math. That's the only way they can think. So if you're not able to think in those terms and communicate in those terms, then you're going to be at a disadvantage even in the manufacturing sector. But one of the things we know is that technology is spreading across all industries, and some people are saying we shouldn't even refer to a tech industry anymore because every kind of company is becoming, or every kind of industry is becoming a tech industry. So this is really a skill set that all of us need in the 21st century.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And what, this report, I can't recommend it enough to any employers in any segment and anybody in the industry and on the technology side as well. But what would you hope that employers take away from your report?
If I had to give them one phrase, it would be that the future is now. They need to be proactive in finding people who've got the skills that are most in demand and cultivating those talent pools for people who can engage with technology or whatever other skill is high on their list. And if they can't go out and find those people, then they need to think really hard about how they can cultivate those skills in the people that they do have in-house or the people that they will be bringing in anyway. One of the things that we've seen over the last couple of decades is a decline in training. Despite all these great training companies and training technologies that have evolved, we just find that corporations aren't investing in developing their own employees as much as before. And that's a long and complicated story, and there's a big debate about why that's happening, what can be done about it. But I think it's worth reminding employers to think hard about how they're going to bring in all those skills, and whether they'll buy them or whether they will build them with their existing workforce.
And what about workers or employees, especially in manufacturing and healthcare? I'm curious, would you have them learn from the what you learned in writing this report?
Well, again, the future is now. It's not the robots aren't coming for your job in 20 years. They're coming for your job now. And they're not going to necessarily take your job away, but they're going to be on the job with you. So you've got to find a way to shake hands with them and make that trend your friend.
Okay. I like that. I like that. Well, this has been great. I could talk to you about this for another hour, but we're running out of time. So, couple of quick questions for you to wrap up. Where can everyone find iSIMS and find your report?
We can go to isims.com/hiringinsights to take a look at my blog and the reports that we put out. You can also follow me on Twitter at jwrightstuff. So that's JWRIGHT stuff on Twitter, where I talk about all kinds of labor market trends using our data, other people's data, anything we can get our hands on.
That's great. That's great. And I'll provide some links when we post this to everything you just mentioned to make it easy for everyone as well. Josh, I want to thank you so much for being here. This was a really interesting conversation. I really enjoyed it.
My pleasure.
I want to thank Josh Wright from iSIMS. Do yourself a favor and check out the iSIMS hiring trend report that Josh writes. Go to isims.com and on the top of the website, just click on hiring trends. You'll see that report there, as well as other great data-based resources. Thanks to everyone for listening to HR MarketWatch. If you're interested in any of the research that I referenced today, you can find it at hrwins.com, always for free. If you think you'd like to be a guest on HR MarketWatch, send me an email at hrmlikemarketwlikewatch, that's hrmw@hrwins.com. You've been listening to HR MarketWatch. Learn more about the trends and the technology we discussed at hrwins.com and find more HR MarketWatch episodes on the HR Happy Hour Network at hrhappyhour.net. Thanks, everyone.